I'll be speaking tonight about the Parshas Zos Habracha. The last eight Sukkim and the Parsha speak about the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. The eighth Pasuk from the end begins, Vayom Hashem Moshe Eben Hashem, describing the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Talmud has a discussion regarding the authorship of these Shmoneh Pesukim Shabbater, these last eight Sukkim. Who exactly wrote these? Can it possibly make sense that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote up his own obituary? He describes his own death and the way he was buried by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Vayikra Oso Bagai, that God buried him. And then Yeshua ben Nun took over, and they saw were crying for a month and so on. Does that make sense that he's describing his own death? So the Talmud quotes a Machlokes HaTanaim, a dispute among the Tanaim, exactly who wrote this. So one opinion in the Talmud is that these last, the last section in Chumash Dvarim was written by Yeshua ben Nun. And in fact, there is a pasuk in the book of Yeshua which says something to the effect that Yeshua ben Nun wrote something. It's unclear what the pasuk says in Yeshua, so one Tana interprets that that's what it means, that Yeshua ben Nun wrote this last section of the Chumash which describes the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. Aye, but the other pasuk says earlier in Chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the entire Torah from the beginning to the end, ad tumam, he wrote everything to the end. So this view holds that it means almost till the end. It doesn't actually mean, not to be taken literally, the concluding chapter obviously could not possibly have been written by Yeshua ben Nun. And the other opinion among the Tanaim is that this cannot be, because that's the generally accepted opinion. It cannot be, because since the Chumash itself says that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote everything ad tumam, till the very end, till the very conclusion, so this seems to imply that he even wrote the last few psukim as well. And the pasuk in the book of Yeshua, which says that Yeshua ben Nun wrote something, is speaking about something else. He established Ori Miklot, and he wrote something about Ori Miklot. It has nothing to do with the last section in the Chumash Devarim. Then the Gemara quotes, in connection with this dispute among the Tanaim, the Gemara quotes it is that when we read Kriyas HaTorah, on our practice is that we read Zos HaBracha on whatever. So the Gemara says there is a special din regarding the last eight sukkim that Yochid Kori Yosam. It's different from all of the other Torah that these eight sukkim have a special halacha that they have to be read by a Yochid. What exactly does that mean is very unclear. The Rambam understands this Gemara. The Rambam has a very strange interpretation. The Rambam understands this to mean that whereas the Mishnah tells us in Megillah that for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah we always require a minyan, because it's considered a Dovish of Kedusha, just like when you repeat the Shemona Esrei, and you want to say Kedusha, or you want to say Kaddish, or you want to say Baruch Hu. So every time one recites the Dovish of Kedusha, we require a minyan of Asgara. So too, for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah, we also consider Kriyas HaTorah a Dovish of Kedusha, and we should always need a minyan. Here is an exception to the rule. You only need a minyan at the beginning of Parshas Zos HaBracha. Once you get to the last eight psukim, Yochid Kori Yosam, you can lain, you can continue to lain, even though the minyan left. Everybody gets an aliyah and they leave to make kiddush, so everybody left. That's what the Ravid writes in his commentary on the Ram. Where did the minyan go? Why did they disappear? Where did they go? Somebody went to make kiddush after they got their aliyah. Whatever, very strange Ramam. The Ramam understands that Pshat and the Gemara means that for the last aliyah you don't require a minyan. Other Mefarshim learn differently. We'll just mention the Rambam because it fits, we'll explain it in the context of the Gemara. So the Gemara asks a question. Bishleimer, if we should assume that the last eight Sukkim of the Torah were written by somebody other than Moshe Rabbeinu, namely by Yeshua ben Nun, then we understand why they have a separate status, why there's a separate din, that you don't require a minyan. According to the Rambam, Yochid Kori Yosam, you can lay them without a minyan. Not a Dov Shibidusha. That part of the Chumash that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu was on the highest level of Nevuah. The Rambam writes in the Ikori HaEmunah, in the 13 Ikori HaEmunah, one Ikor is that we believe in prophecy. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives prophecy to human beings. The second Ikor HaEmunah is that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adon HaNevi'im. That the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu was on a much higher level. It was a Shechina, that what the Midrashim use an expression of a Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Bronah. He wasn't really speaking with his own voice. The pasuk says, "Oh, the kinyan and the kol." It's the kol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking through the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu. So we understand why, in reading all of Kriyas HaTorah from the beginning till the middle of the Zos HaBracha, one requires a minyan, because this constitutes the Dovah Shebikdusha, because you're reading Mamish Dibre Lekim Chaim, you're reading the direct dictation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu, and Emchina Shchina Medaberet Mitoch Rana. But on the last Shmoneh Pesukim Shel HaTorah, if we should assume like that a minyan among the Tanoim that was written by Yeshua Ben Nun, so Yeshua Ben Nun was a lower level of prophecy, was no longer Shchina Medaberet Mitoch Rana. So the Gemara says, then we understand why the din is different, why it should be Yachid Koryosam, why you don't need a minyan, because it doesn't constitute a Dovah Shebikdusha. But the Gemara asks, if one should assume the way it's generally assumed, you can't really say a psak on this issue, it's a historical question, who wrote the Shmoneh Pesukim Shel HaTorah? Was it written by Moshe Rabbeinu, or was it written by Yeshua Ben Nun? How can you say that you pask in what halacha is? There's no nachkamina lahalacha, the Gemara doesn't have any difference. There's no shaykh psak, but it's generally assumed the way the other opinion presented, that even the last 8 psukim were also written by Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara asks, if one should assume that even the last 8 psukim were also written by Moshe Rabbeinu, so why manishtana? Why should the din of the Shmoneh Pesukim Shel HaTorah be different from the Kriyas HaTorah before? If the whole Kriyas HaTorah and the whole Hamishuchim Shitorah requires Asorah, you require a minyan, because we consider everything as Dovah Shebikdusha, because it's Nevuah, Moshe Rabbeinu, all of our Shalom. Such a high level of Nevuah that Shechina Medaberet Mitoch Rana, so why should it be different on the Shmoneh Pesukim Shel HaTorah? So the Gemara says that even if one should assume that the last 8 Pesukim were also written by Moshe Rabbeinu, still it was a major difference. In what sense was the difference? So the Gemara says, because until the very end of the Chumash, it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer, Moshe Omer V'Koistev. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was dictating to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu would deliver the prophecy to Bnei Yisrael first, Moshe Omer, and then after he would deliver the Nevuah to Bnei Yisrael, then he would record it, then he would write it down. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mitzavah him, commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to record it in the Sefer Torah after he first delivered the Nevuah. And on the Shmoneh Pesukim Shel HaTorah, he couldn't possibly deliver the Nevuah yet, because everything is written by Lashon Ovar. Moshe Rabbeinu died, and he was buried in Yishuv, and went to cover. It didn't happen yet. So how could he possibly deliver this Nevuah to Bnei Yisrael if it wasn't true yet? So in the Shmoneh Pesukim Shel HaTorah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu did not deliver the Nevuah first. He just, Moshe Koisei did Dema. Moshe was not Oimer. He didn't first deliver the Nevuah to Bnei Yisrael. He just wrote it down, and he was crying while he wrote it down. So the Gemara says that since it was different, well, the Ishtanu, since the last 8 Pesukim of the Chumash, although they were written by Moshe Rabbeinu, but they were written in a very different way, that Moshe Rabbeinu did not first deliver the Nevuah, so therefore the din is different also, that you don't require a minyan. Why should that be so significant, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did not deliver the Nevuah first to Bnei Yisrael? Not really too clear in the Gemara. Just because it was different historically, so the din should be different. If it was written by Yeshua Ben Nun, then we understand. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is on a higher level of Nevuah, that's Nikah that the Rambam writes, so that Nevuah is the Dovah Shebikdusha. To read that, to read Kriyas HaTorah, Hamishu Chamishu Torah, till the end, you need a minyan, and to read the part that's written by Yeshua is a lower level of Nevuah, it doesn't require a minyan, it's not a Dovah Shebikdusha. But to tell me that everything is written by Moshe Rabbeinu, but he was crying when he wrote it, and he didn't first deliver the prophecy to Bnei Yisrael, so what? So why should that be different? It's not too clear in the Gemara. So the Rambam adds on a little bit. The Rambam quotes this Gemara. He adds on. The Rambam is also a little unclear. The Rambam writes, since the simple reading of the text of the Chumash, starting from the 8th pasuk from the end, Vayom Hashem Moshe Eved Hashem, describing the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, the simple reading implies that this was written after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu by somebody other than Moshe Rabbeinu. Poilem Ashmoan Acham Nisus Moshe. Since it sounds like it's written after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, it conveys the mistaken impression that it was not written by Moshe Rabbeinu, so therefore the din is different, and therefore you don't require a minyan, because it's not considered a Dovah Shebikdusha. So I remember when we were learning this Gemara, Rav Soloveitchik said he doesn't understand why should the Rambam understand the Gemara as saying just because it conveys the mistaken impression, because it's conveying to us the mistaken impression that it was written after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu by somebody else other than Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, because somebody may make a mistake, but if it was truly written indeed by Moshe Rabbeinu, so what do I care what the mistaken impression is? Why should the din be different just because one who doesn't know might think otherwise? Rav Soloveitchik thought that you have to translate the words of the Rambam a little differently. Torah mashmo, and usually the word mashmo is, means the impression. The simple mashmo is the simple pshat. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that the Rambam probably must have meant something else over here with the term mashmo. He said it's a little bit dochuk perhaps, but we know that in modern Hebrew, if you pronounce the word a little differently, so it has a different meaning. Mashmaut. Mashmaut means meaningfully, significantly. So he thought that that's perhaps what the Rambam meant. Hoil mashmo nacha mitzvah moshe doesn't mean to say that since the superficial impression that one gets from reading the last section of the Chumash is that it was written by somebody other, Moshe Rabbeinu, what do I care what the superficial impression is? It's wrong. It was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, so the din should be the same. You should need a minyan, you should be a dam, should be tushin. So he thought the Rambam meant something else. Since it didn't have meaningfulness, it didn't become true until after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. So it comes out that when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing these psukim, he couldn't deliver the prophecy to the Bnei Yisrael first because it wasn't true. You can't deliver a prophecy if it's not true. And it's not speaking in the future. He doesn't say, I'm going to die, Yeshua is going to take over. He's writing in the Chumash, I died already, and I was buried by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Yeshua ben Nun took over, and they observed the mourning period for 30 days of Avelus. Everything is written B'loshan Ovar, not B'loshan Ovar. So he couldn't possibly have delivered the prophecy to Bnei Yisrael first. Not only didn't he deliver the prophecy first when he wrote it down, it was not yet this Kadesh, because it wasn't true yet. It only became true after he died. So at the moment of his writing, it wasn't yet this Kadesh. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik thought maybe that's the pshat that the Gemara says, the Moshe Koseh B'dema. The Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu was crying when he was writing these psukim. What was he crying? Because he was writing about his own death. Everybody knows we're going to die. Sooner or later, everybody's going to die. To me, it was more imminent. He knew he was going to die. He said, in the beginning of Parshas Vayelech, he says, I'm 120 years old today. Today's my birthday. He doesn't say that he was crying over there. But that's why was he crying only over here when he's writing the description of his death? It's interesting, just parenthetically, Rav Soloveitchik used to mention that his grandfather, Rav Chaim, when he reached a certain age, was so petrified of death, he was so worried that he was so obsessed that he was going to die, and he wanted to do something in order to remove the pachas, the fright of death, that he started learning Mishnayis Aholis, where the Mishnayis give all of the dinim about dead bodies. When is a person tamei? When is a kohen permitted to go into the room? And you're not allowed to go into the room. If there's a mace in this room, does the tumah go to the next room, upstairs, downstairs, on top of the room, outside the windows, and so on. Very difficult Mishnayis there, Mishnayis Aholos. Rav Soloveitchik said that his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, when he reached a certain age in life, when he started to worry about death, that he felt in order to overcome the fear of death, he's going to talk about death a lot, so he'll get used to it. So it won't frighten him. It'll be Lashon Rogel by him. So Moshe Rabbeinu also, what is it that Moshe Rabbeinu was crying all of a sudden now? He didn't like the obituary. Very glowing obituary over here. What is there to cry about? So Rav Soloveitchik thought, perhaps on Derech HaDrash, that Moshe Rabbeinu was crying that he didn't have this chiyah to be mekadosh the last Shmoneh Pesukim Shabbater, because it wasn't true. At the time that he wrote it down, it wasn't yet true, and it cannot have a kedusha Sefer Torah if the story is not true yet. It only became true after he died, so it became Kodesh Me'elo. At the time he was writing it, he didn't yet sanctify it. He didn't yet endow these Shmoneh Pesukim with kedusha Sefer Torah if it wasn't true. So perhaps that's why he was crying. Perhaps that's how the Rambam understood the Gemara, that the Shmoneh Pesukim Shabbat Torah do not have the same high level of kedusha as the rest of the Sefer Torah. The whole Sefer Torah is the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, which we consider as Dabbe should be kedusha, and we require a minyan. We require a minyan for the Kriyas HaTorah. And the Shmoneh Pesukim Shabbat Torah, the last section, although it truly, we assume historically, it was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, but it was Adayin Lainis Kaddish Al Yadda. At the time that he wrote it, he did not succeed in endowing it with kedusha, because it wasn't yet true. Hoilo Mashma, Nacha Mitzvah Moshe. The significance and the meaningfulness of this story didn't come true until way later, until after he died, till the next day. Till 30 days later, after the mourning period was over and Yeshua ben Nun took over. That's when it became true. But since it wasn't this Kaddish like Moshe Rabbeinu, even though it was the Nebuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, since it wasn't this Kaddish Al Yadda, at the time that he recorded it, that he wrote it down, perhaps that's the reason why the Rambam understood the Gemara, that it doesn't constitute the double shikush. Very interesting in the description of the obituary of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Torah heaps praises, HaKadosh Baruch Hu heaps on praises on Moshe Rabbeinu, and it stresses that he was the greatest Navi from among all of the other Navim. The Rambam considers this one of the Yud Gimel Likori Amunah, that the Rambam is on a higher level, that Moshe Rabbeinu is on a higher level of prophecy than the other Nevi'im. So it's interesting. The Torah is coming to praise Moshe Rabbeinu, to write his obituary, and there's one word over here that sticks out, the word B'Yisrael. Why does it say there was no other Jewish prophet as great as Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Tanoim point out in this Tifrei that among the other nations of the world there was a prophet who was on the same high level of prophecy in Moshe Rabbeinu, that was Bilam. And that's what the word comes to imply. Why does the Torah write that over here? We're trying to praise Moshe Rabbeinu. Imagine Moshe Rabbeinu died, we're giving a head, here's the Oren, giving a head, we're going to say how great he was, and we're going to say, and by the way, he was greater than all the other prophets among the Jewish people, but there was one non-Jew who was just as great as him at the Esther. So Levi, you mentioned the competition, you mentioned that there was someone else who was also great. So you leave out that point. Why did you bring that out over here? It's very strange. So there's a famous comment that is said over the name of Rav Elbel Soloveitchik. Remember, many learned in Yeshiva must remember Rabbi Shirelik, Zachem of Rav Haragot, used to say over a lot of things Rav Elbel Soloveitchik. And he said a comment on the Gemara in Bava Basra, in the first Perek. The Gemara has a discussion of the Kisvei HaKadosh, the 24 books of the Tanakh. Who wrote each one of the books? So we know the Hamisha Chumshi Torah were written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Who wrote the book of Yeshua? Yeshua ben Nun. And the Gemara goes through each one of the books of the Tanakh, who authored the books. Then the Gemara says, in the middle of this long dissertation, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Hamisha Chumshi Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu Kosav Sif wrote, he wrote his book, Torah Moshe, and also Parshas Bilam. In addition to the Hamisha Chumshi Torah, he also wrote Parshas Bilam. What do you mean Parshas Bilam? That's one of the Parshas in the middle of Chumash Bamidbar, Parshas Balak. That's Bilam. But why does the Braisa single out Parshas Bilam that was also written by Moshe Rabbeinu? So on the side of all of the editions of the Gemara, the standard editions of the Gemara that have printed, that you should look in the Sefer Shalom, David Schneibel has a bridge where he poses this kasha and he gives a discussion of this. So Abba the Salvation gave his in. He said that the answer lies in this comment that's given over here by the Sifrei. The Pasuk tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was on a higher level of Nevuah than the other prophets. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only prophet who had a Bechina of Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Ronai. Direct dictation, all the other prophets saw a vision. They had a vision and they had to interpret the vision using their own language, and that's why the Talmud tells us that even if two prophets were to receive the same nevuah, the same prophecy, the same mare, the same kalom, that each one of them would have to present it, would have to deliver the message in his own language, and you would never have shnei nevim mitnavim b'sidna nefet. You would never have two prophets saying over the same prophecy word for word. Moshe Rabbeinu was not given a halom. The Tzukim say in Parshas Balos, he wasn't given a vision that he had to interpret. He was given a direct dictation. That's what it means. Shkeinu medaberes mitavronim. The nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu was osios and nekudos, direct dictation. So Bilam was also given direct dictation. But that's what the Gemara means to say. Although the Torah tells us, the Torah implies that there was another prophet who had this level of prophecy, that he wasn't given a vision and he had to interpret it using his own style language. Bilam is also given direct dictation, so you shouldn't think that just like what Moshe Rabbeinu said is on a high level of Torah as opposed to a level of Nevuah, what all the other prophets say is called Nevuah. Yeshaya, Yirmiyah, Cheskel, Treyasa, Yeshua, Shoftim, all the others, that's the Pinah of the book. It's not called Torah. Torah is on a higher level. So one might perhaps think that whatever prophecies were received by Bilam, Bilam also got a direct dictation word for word, letter for letter. That's what it means. Like, come now, you're the Israel. There's no other Jewish prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu, but Bilam was on the same madrig. One perhaps might think that since Bilam was on the same madrig, his parsha was endowed with the status of Torah when he delivered the message, when he said the Nevuah. So that's what the Talmud tells us is not correct. The Talmud stresses, Moshe Kosev Sivro, who parshas Bilam. The Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who endowed Parshas Bilam with Kedushas Torah, despite the fact that Bilam was also on this high madrega of Nebuah, that he got a direct dictation of Osius and included, nonetheless, his Nebuah didn't attain the status of Torah until it was recorded by Moshe Rabbeinu. There are certain halakhas that are derived from Parshas Bilam, from the prophecy of Bilam. So the Gemara means to imply that if not for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was given this prophecy again and was told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to incorporate this into the Chumash, the Parshas Bilam will not be endowed with the status of Torah. It will just be a madrega of the word. Taka, why? But Bilam has a direct dictation word for word, letter for letter. So why should, just like whatever prophecy Moshe Rabbeinu said became automatically Torah, so why shouldn't Bilam be the same? So the answer is, the Pesukim tell us in Parshas Balak that when Bilam had his prophecy, it was not exactly the same as Moshe Rabbeinu. The Pasuk expresses itself regarding the way he got his prophecy, that it was Nofel Ugluye Noyim, that he would fall down, he would faint and collapse when he got his Nevuah. The Rambam writes both in the Arach HaZoker and in the Sefer Moreh Nevuchim that there were several differences between the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu and that of the other prophets. Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecies were given b'hokit, v'lo b'chalok. He didn't fall asleep. He was wide awake, kidabi rishel rieh, fonim b'fonim, like a person speaks to someone else. All of the other prophets collapsed, and they lost their consciousness at the time they received their prophecy, including Bilam HaRosh, including Bilam. Although, when he got his prophecy, it was a direct dictation, Osius and Akudas, word for word, letter for letter, but still it was not on the Madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was Panim Mefonim. And that's what the Pasuk says here in the Hesped. In today's Kriya it says, L'akom Novi Yod Yisrael Kimoshe, there was no other Jewish prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu, parenthetically implying that there was one non-Jew. Bilam was a non-Jew who had, in a certain sense, the same level of prophecy as Moshe Rabbeinu, but only in one aspect, namely, he was given the prophecy as a direct dictation. But still, Hashedo Hashem Panim Al Panim. Panim Al Panim means Kedabirish Al Rieu, a prophecy, Behokit, Baloba Halom, while a person is awake. This was only Moshe Rabbeinu. Bilam did not have that madrigal. That's what the post expresses. In Parshas Bilam, it says, No fail of Luye Noy. In fact, the famous passage in the Sefer HaKuzari by Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, where he points out that the Greek philosophers divided everything in the world into four categories: Domim, Sameach, Chai, Medaber. They divided everything into mineral, vegetable, animal, and human being. So the Rabbi Chaim Oizer, who died, or Chaim Oizer was the Rav Zilner, who died 50 some odd years ago. Rav Chaim Oizer was very fond of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. He was the Rav in Brisk, Chaim Brisk. So he said, it's not correct. All of everything in the world is divided into five categories. Dorim, Sameh, Chaim, Medaber, Brisker, Rav. To say there are five categories. Brisker, Rav, Chaim Brisker, something different. So this Melitza, this expression that he got, is based on a passage in the Kuzari. The Kuzari has something similar, not Brisker Rav. Kuzari writes, everything in the world is divided into five categories: mineral, vegetable, animal, human being, and Klal Yisrael. Why should he say Klal Yisrael is different? So, in the conversation, in the book of the Sefer HaKuzari, the king of a non-Jewish community had a dream. The angel appeared to him in the dream and he said that his intentions are fine, very noble, he wants to serve God, but he's worshipping the wrong religion. So, and he kept on having this repeated dream, So he realized that he has to change his religion, so he called in a representative of the Jewish religion, the Christian religion, and the Muslim religion. Each one should present the merchandise, what their religion is all about, and he decided that the Jewish religion is the correct one. And then he had the basic outline of the story is true. And there was such a thing. It was the Melech HaKuzari, the king of the nation, and they all converted to the Jewish religion. And then Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi wrote sort of a historical novel visualizing what the conversation was between the king and the chaver and the rabbi, and what exactly, what were the questions that were bothering the king, and what the answers were that the rabbi gave him. So in the midst of the conversation, he depicts the way the rabbi is stressing the uniqueness of the Klal Yisrael, And he says, don't think that everything in the world is just divided into four categories. No, Klal Yisrael is something different. How do you know? So he says, could you possibly visualize a person who wouldn't eat and drink for 40 days and 40 nights and doesn't sleep, and he's studying for 40 days and 40 nights, and he continues to survive, and he doesn't die? So the king says, that's ridiculous. That's an angel. That's not somebody on this globe. So the rabbi says, no. It once happened with Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, because it once happened in the history of the world, what's happened to Moshe Rabbeinu? So that leads them to believe that the whole Klal Yisrael is different. But really, it's a little difficult argument what he has. Just because it once happens like a net. It happened one time, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, 40 days and 40 nights. Lachem Laya Halte, my Moshe Sisi, he didn't eat, and he didn't drink, and he didn't sleep. So because it happened once, in a miraculous fashion, so that demonstrates that the whole Klal Yisrael constitutes a different category of the Bria. Maybe the Jewish people are part of the Medaber, we belong to the human race like everybody else. No, once in the history, it was a fluke of history that it happened to... No. The Kuzari understands that that's a hechach on the whole Jewish people. How does it prove that all the Jewish people, the rest of the Jewish people, never had such a madrega? No, he felt that they did have. Because at the time of Maimon HaSinai, the Torah tells us that we all had a nevuah, b'hokit b'lai b'chalai. Everybody was awake. There's an interesting medrash where the medrash says that Bnei Yisrael were preparing 49 days from Yitzias Mitzrayim, waiting till Maimon HaSinai. Then the night before they went to sleep and they didn't wake up on time in the morning. They had the waiting with great expectation. This person is waiting for his chasana. Waiting. He's not going to fall asleep at all the night before. What do you mean? He falls asleep and he misses it. And he doesn't wake up on time. It doesn't make any sense. How can the medrash say, and I thought his brother had to cause the dew to come down. The dew came down from heaven, the towel. And they were woken up by the dew, and then they had to get dressed and take off the pajamas and get ready for the Maimon HaSinai. How can it be that they were sleeping? So one of the commentaries on the Medrash explained that they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu is the only prophet who gets in the dew while he's awake. Everybody else only gets in the dew when they're sleeping. So they put on their pajamas for the occasion of Maimon HaSinai. They thought there's going to be in the dew b'chaloi. Why should they put on their big day on to not fall down in the dirt of the desert and get the big day on to fall dirty? They may as well be in the pajamas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu woke them up in the morning and said, no, this is going to be a madrega, everyone. All the Klal Yisrael are going to have a madrega of nevuah, panim al panim, divrei Hashem imochem. That's what the expression panim al panim means in the Chumash. That's what it means over here. In describing, in the hesped of Moshe Rabbeinu, describing the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu. He mentioned Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Navi among the Jewish people. There was parenthetically one non-Jew by the name of Bilam HaRasha who had a certain aspect of the voice of Moshe Rabbeinu. That his Nevuah was not a Chaloyim, he didn't see a vision, he had a direct dictation of Oisius and Nekudus. But on the other hand, Moshe Rabbeinu had a Madregam Nevuah that Bilam did not have. What was that Madregam Nevuah? Ashaydo Hashem Panim Al Panim, his Nevuah was Bahakit Shalai Bahalai, he was not sleeping. And this notion, this unique status of Panim Al Panim was not only by Moshe Rabbeinu, like the Sefer of Chazar points out. All of Klal Yisrael were Zeichet to that on one occasion, at the time of Maimon HaSinai. And the idea behind that is to demonstrate that Nevuah is something very natural to us. Via Nochri, Nevuah, even by a person on the Madrega Bilam who's getting a direct dictation from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nevuah causes such a shock in the person that he cannot possibly remain awake. He has to collapse. He has to fall apart. Even one on the Madrega Bilam. But by Bnei Yisrael, it does not necessarily cause that. If it happened on the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, that everyone had a Madrega Nevuah upon him upon him. And Moshe Rabbeinu continued to have that Madrega Nevuah upon him upon him. So the Chover, Sefer HaKuzari understands from this that this constitutes a separate category in the Bria. The Zemim Tamei Chai Medaber in Klal Yisrael. It's not just that it was a nest that happened on one occasion for one person, Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 days and 40 nights. If it happened for him, and it happened for all of Bnei Yisrael, that they could receive the Nevuah Har Sinai and the Madrega upon him, upon him, means that Klal Yisrael is on a different Madrega. The concluding pasuk in the Chumash stresses the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, Cholayolach Hazakol V'Chol Amoroh Hagadol, Asher Asa Moshe La'Eni Kol Yisrael. All the terrible, frightening, horrifying things that Moshe Rabbeinu did. What were the frightening things, the terrifying things? So
Rashi quotes the tradition of the rabbi, the smashing of the luchas. He did things on his own. Moshe Rabbeinu did things on his own. Sometimes great tzaddikim and different generations do things and they're horrifying, and you think, how can he do such a thing? To smash the luchas, it's an avera. It's like taking a Sefer Torah and ripping it, but it's not Stam Pei Sefer Torah. This is the original luchas, carved out by HaKadosh Baruch himself, the original autographed copy by the author himself, by HaKadosh Baruch, takes the luchas and he smashes without authorization, without permission. Maybe there won't be any second luchas. This is the kiddushin of Klal Yisrael. So the Rebbe Shlom gives him a Yashikach Shashibarta. Rashi quotes the famous comments from the rabbis. Moshe Rabbeinu was on a madrega that he knew that HaKadosh Baruch was going to be maskim al yada. He knew on that he had the feeling that was the right thing to do. We have very often like that, the Chachamim make takonis derabbana, and sometimes people wonder, why do they have to introduce so many chumras? Or sometimes the Chachamim introduce kulas. They have chumras, kulas. They sometimes seem to change the dinim of the Torah, and we wonder, did they really have the authorization? Were they authorized by HaKadosh Baruch to make these shinuyim? And the Talmud says that we have, on several instances, we had simonim from heaven, we had signs from heaven indicating that it was a scheme of Das HaMokoyim Al Daitom, that Min HaShemayim they were masking with the Chachamim. And the only reason why we follow anything that the rabbis tell us is because we assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is backing them. Not that the rabbis have authority on their own. We assume that the rabbis are acting in accordance with the will, with the wish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu smashed the luchas, it was such a startling thing, it was a Meira HaGadol, a frightening thing. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a Yashikach and said, on this occasion, you have to do the right thing, even though I didn't command you. So too, the Talmud tells us that all of the takonis and all of the gzeiros that the Chachamim made throughout all the generations, which seems to be very often changing the laws of the Torah, we assume that the reason why they're binding is because they weren't changing, because that's really what God wanted. The rabbis knew how to read in between the lines in order to know what God's wish really was. Back of his mind, even though he didn't tell us explicitly, the rabbis had the ability to understand the spirit of the law, not only to know the letter of the law, but to know the spirit of the law as well. Some people think they know the spirit of the law. The Talmud tells us the only one who can figure out the spirit of the law is the one who knows a lot of letters of the law. If you know all the letters of the law, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. So if you have a few pieces missing, if you only have one piece and you're missing the other 99 pieces, how can you guess what the rest of the picture is supposed to look like? Unless you have the cover for the box that has the picture. But if you don't have the picture, just have one or two pieces, how can you guess what the rest is going to look like? But if you have 95 pieces of the puzzle, just missing 5 pieces, and you can figure out already what the missing pieces are. So here also, if you want someone to figure out what is the spirit of the law, what direction does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want us to go, if we want to volunteer to introduce new takonis, new minhagim, we want to make a new yontif, some new observance, some new practice, in every generation, the Rabbanim are introducing new practices on the assumption that they are reading correctly what the spirit of the law is in order to know how to make new takonis and minhagim and siogim and harchokis and so on. So who are the ones who are qualified to read well the spirit of the law? The ones who know 95, if they have 95 pictures of the puzzle, so they know the missing 5 pictures, they know the missing 5 pieces. They only know 5 pieces of the puzzle. How can they possibly know what the rest of the picture is? How can they know what is the spirit of the law? One has to be on a madrega to be able to get a Yashikach from HaKadosh Baruch Hu or a Yashikach Shashibarta. The very opening of Parshas Zayis HaBracha is a very moving medrash that appears in the Medrash Rabbah and the Alta Shimoni, different midrashim, the same medrash appears. Medrash draws a hemshech, a continuation in granting brachas. Medrash says that Avraham Avinu granted a bracha to Yitzchak granted a bracha to Yaakov Avinu when he sent him away, when he had to run away from Esav. And then when Yaakov Avinu was an old man, he granted blessings to his children, and then we find Moshe Rabbeinu granting brachas, and then we find David HaMelech granting brachas. And the Medrash has a beautiful comment that each one of these tzaddikim picked up where the other one left off. The expression used in connection with Avraham Avinu is that Avraham Avinu had many children in addition to Yitzchak. He had children from the Pilakshim. So it says, now Pilakshim, Meshalei Avraham Nasan, Avraham Matanot, he gave them gifts. and to Yitzchak it says Vayitan lo es kol ha-shalom. So the expression used by the Chumash in connection with the blessing that Avraham Avinu granted to Yitzchak was Vayitan, Aloshin Vayitan. Then the Medrash says that when Yitzchak is about to grant a blessing to Yaakov his son, so he uses the expression Vayitan lo chahu Elohim. He picks up using, he starts off with the same expression that his father used, Vayitan, that Avraham Avinu used when he was granting a bracha to Yitzchak. Yitzchak begins with that, and then it goes on, it proceeds to use a different expression. And then, I don't have a gracious, and then the Medrash continues to point out that when Yaakov is about to die and he's granting blessings to his children, if you look in the Chumash Bereishis, you'll see it, Yaakov opens his blessings with the phrase that Yitzchak concluded with. At the end of Yitzchak, Talashmam, Shemani Horaz, Rav Dachum Sirosh, the concluding phrase is the opening phrase of the bracha that Yaakov begins with. The concluding phrase in the bracha that Yaakov gives blessings to all of his children, to all of the Shlokim. And then the concluding pasuk is, Zos HaShevera Chosam Yaakov Avim, the expression that used is Zos, at the conclusion of the blessings of Yaakov Avinu. And that's how Zos HaBracha begins. Moshe Rabbeinu begins with the last word. And how does Moshe Rabbeinu conclude his bracha? At the end of the blessings of Zos HaBracha, Ashrecha Yisrael Micha Mocha, the final pasuk right before Shvi, which is the last pasuk in Shechta Lamikun, the last pasuk in the bracha, Ashrecha Yisrael. So the Medrash says, with the expression that Moshe Rabbeinu concludes with, that's how David HaMelech picks up and he starts Ashri Hoish. He starts with the expression Ashri. It's a very beautiful idea that the Medrash is conveying, and it's very important for all of us here in this center. I'm visiting. Some of you live here in Eretz Yisrael. I'm visiting Eretz Yisrael, so we visit different communities here, where you get the impression that you're back 200 years ago. And you visit other communities, but we're in Tavshin Nun Hei. We're in the 20th century. We're not 200 years ago. And we assume that we're not doing anything wrong. We assume that we can continue to move on in the world. Medrash doesn't say that Yitzchak Avinu says exactly the same bracha as Avraham Avinu, and Yankov says the exact same bracha, and Moshe Rabbeinu says the same bracha, and David HaMelech says the same bracha. The Medrash stresses that there's a hemshich, that Yitzchak picks up from the place where Avraham Avinu left off, and Yankov picks up using the last expression that Yitzchak Avinu used, and Moshe Rabbeinu picks up using the last expression that Yankov Avinu used, and David HaMelech picks up. They don't say verbatim the same thing in each generation. Each person lives in a different generation. You need a different bracha, it's a different style of living. Everything is different. It's very difficult to act as if you live 200 years ago. We don't. We live in this world. We don't live. It's like a Dovish La Balayon, a Dovish Eloi Boilo. We don't live 100 years ago. We certainly don't live 200 years ago. We live in this world. But we have to follow in the Masorah of our forefathers. We have to figure out what is the tradition of our forefathers and how to translate it into the modern day circumstances. That's what I always point out, that Rav Soloveitchik in our yeshiva, the Rabbeim all gave the shurim in Yiddish. I met here this summer, 2 weeks ago, a week ago on Friday night, I met a young man from Chicago who told me that when he first came to Yeshivas of Yitzchak Ono, so they interviewed him and they asked him, does he understand Yiddish? I said, his name doesn't understand Yiddish well. So he said, you better go back to Stoki because he won't survive here. All the shurim were in Yiddish. He had to go back. He had to learn the story with the shurim were in Yiddish. And by us, and why you the shurim were always in Yiddish? And the first one to change was Rav Soloveitchik. He started giving the shurim in English. He saw that the students won't understand. And now, almost all of the shurim are in English in yeshiva. So this is not, we don't consider this a break in the Masorah. They didn't give the shurim in Yiddish in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. So obviously the shurim has to be given in a language that the people understand. So over the course of the generations, sometimes you have to change the language. It's better if you can say over verbatim. The Mishnah says, you have to say over verbatim if you possibly can. If the Talmidim won't understand, you have no choice, you have to say in translation. And the same is true regarding many minhagim. Many dinim, many minhagim. A lot of times we think we're doing exactly the same as our forefathers, and it's not the same. It's exactly the same this act, but because we live in a different world, the circumstances are very different. So doing exactly the same is often a shinui. It's not exactly the same. People who want to live the same way their forefathers lived 200 years ago, have to have big rabbonim to pass Mishavis with them to know whether what they're doing is exactly the same or not. A lot of times doing exactly the same is a shinu. This summer I had opportunity to discuss different yeshivas. We were discussing different aspects of this based on Gemaras, and we came up with a lot of interesting halachas where people think they're doing exactly the same, and it's absolutely not. If you do the same, that's a shinu, because the circumstances are so different. So that's what this interesting medrash points out. This is a famous expression that the Medrash has, that every person should ask himself, think to himself, when will my actions live up to the actions? When will they attain the madrega of the actions of my forefathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? So this is a famous comment that the Sfasemes has in his Roshes and Chumash. How can a person be so arrogant as to think to himself, when will I be as great a tzaddik as my grandfather Avraham Yitzchak Yankov? Do I really think I'm going to be as great as Avraham Yitzchak Yankov? Maybe we read from the Chumash. Avraham Avinu lived through the 10 Nisyonos. Would I be able to have an Akedah? Would I be able to have all of these Nisyonos? Probably not. So how can a person have that goal, a chutzpah, to think to himself, Masi Avinu, Maisan, and Maisi Avraham? There's a famous comment that the Sfasemes gives where he reinterprets the word of Yadil. So you shouldn't interpret that it means, when will I attain the madrega, the hagia, the madregazu, when will I attain that madrega? No, it doesn't mean lahagia, it means lingoa, to touch. It means a person should always follow in the tradition of his forefathers, not necessarily always do exactly the same. Sometimes situations require, circumstances mandate, that you have to do a little differently in order to preserve the masorah, like the simple moshul, that we now give the shurim in English. Years ago, the shurim were given in Yiddish because everyone understood Yiddish. To maintain that tradition, to give shurim that people should understand, you have to give in English in certain audiences. In other audiences, you can succeed in giving in Yiddish. But in other audiences, if you give in Yiddish, the people won't follow. So, you won't accomplish anything. So, giving in Yiddish to an audience like this would be a shinui in a minute. The minute would require to give the drasha in English, not to give the drasha in Yiddish. A person should always think to himself, I want to have chacha nagiya on Sarir, and I want to have that it should be a connection, it should be a hemshif. We live in a different world. We do things very differently from our forefathers. But at least it's considered a hemshif. We're not being mishana from the masorah of our forefathers. And for that, we have to seek a lot of guidance. That's very difficult to know how to translate the tradition that we received from our forefathers, from our rabbis, to the present circumstances, and to know how to apply it. How do we apply this masorah? How do we translate it into the modern society? That requires a lot of learning. That's the idea the Medrash says, that each one of the yogos, each one of the tzaddikim, gives a different bracha to their children. You cannot repeat the same bracha. They live in different circumstances, different nisyonos. There are different challenges in their world and in their life, but each one picks up using the last phrase that the one in the previous generation used to show that there's a hemshechiyus, that there is a continuation. Rashi has a beautiful comment on the opening pasuk in the Dois HaBrocha, Hashem Yisinai Bo V'Zorach Niseir Lomo. So Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, it's not his original interpretation, that the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael is one, like a couple who are married, like a husband and a wife. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is compared to the Chosin, and Knesset Yisrael is compared to the Kala. The whole book of Shir HaShirim is based on this assumption. It's a mashal. The whole Sefer Shoshim is a mashal. The Kala is Knesset Yisrael, and the Chosin is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just like the Chosin, as the Kala is marching down the aisle, what Rashi says, let's visualize the parents are marching down the child down the chuppah, the daughter. The chosin is ready there. So the parents let go of the daughter, and the chosin marches out. That's what Rashi says. The chosin marches out from under the chuppah to pick up the bride. Sounds like the way they have it by the goyim. The chosin comes to, walks out to greet the bride, and then he takes the bride under the chuppah. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. Hashem is Sinai Bo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came out to greet us like a chosin hayetzi likras hakal. That's how Rashi quotes from the Tanoim on this pasuk. There is such a discussion in the Gemara in Bava Kama, of all places. She didn't be in a Sefer Shabbos, but in Bava Kama, the Gemara says that on Erev Shabbos, there were Chachamim, there were Tzaddikim, in the days of the Amoroim, who would go out to the field to greet the Shabbos as it was becoming in. just like, so the Maharsha, and they would say, Boi Kala, just like the Chosin goes out to greet the Kala, so too, and the Maharsha, commenting on that, Gemara Bava Kama, quotes this comment that Rashi quotes on Kumash, on this Pasuk, that just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu went to greet Bnei Yisrael, like a Chosin goes to greet the Kala, so too, there were Chachamim who walk out to the field, or walk towards the door, to greet the Kala, to welcome the Shabbos. But then, the Gemara says, the next opinion, in the Gemara, the final conclusion of the Gemara is that we don't have that practice. We just turn towards the door. We don't walk out to greet the Kala. So the Maharsha, in his commentary on Rabbi Kama, wants to know why not. If there is such a practice, if this is what the heretics dictates, that the person is supposed to go greet the Kala, so how come the other Chachamim in the days of the Gemara, and how come most people today do not walk towards the door? We don't walk out, they say the Arizal used to walk out of the field. The other Chachamim in the days of the Gemara, and how come most people today do not walk towards the door? We don't walk out, they say the Arizal used to walk out of the fields in Tzfas in order to greet the Shabbos. We don't have that practice. We just turn towards the door. Why is that? We don't have the practice by our weddings either. We don't have the practice by our weddings. I was told that way before my time, 20 years at least before my time, they told me that one of the boys from the yeshiva got married out of town, and Rabbi Soloveitchik attended the wedding. He was astonished to see where the chosin watched out from under the chuppah to take the kala's arm, and he muttered on his breath, "It's straight from the goy." He felt that it was a chuppah sagoy, that they're going to greet chosin, went out to greet kala. What kind of chuppah sagoy? Rashi quotes it from the Tanoi. That's what the pasuk says in the Torah. Rashi says that that's their affairs. What do you mean chuppah sagoy? So I think the answer is the following. We know that in halacha there are two stages to the marriage. There's what we call erusin, and then there's nisuin. In the days of the Tanakh and the days of the Talmud, until the period of the Gaonim, until after the days of the Talmud, the practice always was that first they would do erisin. The chosin erisin is kiddushin. It doesn't mean engagement. In modern Hebrew, the term erisin is used as a melitza to imply engagement. But in the Tanakh and in the Talmud, the word erisin means kiddushin. The chosin would give a ring to the girl and say hariat mekudeshes me. They would be married. The woman would be an eishes ish. And if they would decide to break off the relationship, she would need a get. The woman would require a get. She's actually married. And then they would give the girl time to buy clothing, to buy sheets, to pick out whatever furniture she wants, and the boy to go get a job, to rent or buy an apartment, whatever, sometimes half a year, sometimes a year, whatever they would make up. And then they would complete the marriage by performing the nisuin. When they would have the nisuin, a half a year or a year after the erusin, so the couple is married already. The couple is married, so this is his wife. That's a chosin and a kala. Strictly speaking, that's called a chosin and a kala. They're married already. They're just holding by completing the marriage and entering into the state of nisuin. Before there's only erusin, why make nisuin? So then the practice truly was that the chosin would go out to greet the kala. That's what Rashi's talking about over here. Our marriage system today is very different. We have a takana from the days of the Gaonim. The institute is that it's risky, it's too risky to get married a year before, to have the woman as an Eishes Ish for a whole year, she's not living with her husband. Who knows what can happen? So they recommend that we shouldn't do that. We should immediately perform the nisuin right after the Eishes. We get engaged. And then we tell the boy to go get a job, get an apartment, whatever, and the girl to buy whatever clothing she needs, he needs, whatever. And then when we have the wedding, so we have the erusin, he gives her the ring, and then right away we have the nisuin, everything all together. There is no hafsaka. There is no pause between the kiddushin and the erusin in the first stage, and the nisuin in the book of the second stage. So by us, strictly speaking, the couple who are marching down to the aisle, they're not related. said, no, Hillel, it's not a chosen in the Kabbalah. He told me that Rabbi Breuer, the Chanel Racha, used to be very machter in that you're not allowed to call them a chosen kal, you have to call them a meshuda and a meshudeches. And strictly speaking, it's correct. A chosen kal is a technical term, halachically speaking, that means a couple who are married already, they already have kiddushin, and now they're holding by making the nisuin, by having the chupin, completing the marriage. But the way we have it today, before they march down to the aisle, they're not related. They're just engaged, but they're not related. They're not married at all. So it's not really a chosen kal. So that's why today we no longer have this practice. If the chosen walks out, he marches out from under the chuppah to greet the kala, he's not a chosen ayetz in the kris kala. He's not a chosen, she's not a kala. He's a meshudah, she's a meshudah. They just had a shidduch. They're engaged, they're not married. So that's al pi pashtus, the reason why we don't have that practice on Friday night. There was already a relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael before marrying Hasina. It wasn't just an engagement. We were married already with the Rabban Shalom. We were married. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to make Maimon Hasina was going to be like the Nisuin. That was going to be the clincher. That was going to complete the marriage, to bring it into the second stage from the Erisin into the Nisuin. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu marched out Yechotzen Hayetz and Likras Kalva. But the Knesset Yisrael had already been chosen as the Kala. They already was the status of the Chosen Kala. But as far as, let's say, Shabbos is concerned, before Shabbos comes in, there's no relationship whatsoever. What do you mean? There's a Chosen Kala relationship. When the Shabbos arrives, so then we treat it as if it's a Chosen Kala. As if the Knesset Yisrael is the Chosen, and the Shabbos is the Kala. But before the Shabbos enters, there is no Erev. What do you say? From Friday morning, from Chatzos on, there's Erev. There is no Erev. Since there is no Erisin, so that's probably why our practice is that we don't march out to greet the Shabbos just for the same reason that we don't march out to greet the Kala under the chuppah, because we're not related yet. There is no status yet al pi din of chosen and Kala. Torah describes the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu transmitted his Torah to the Bnei Yisrael as Mimino Eish Dos Lomo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah from his right hand, so to speak. As if there's visualizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as if he has a right side and left side, right hand and left hand, and gives us the Torah from the right hand. What exactly does that mean? So Kabbalah Svarim point out that we often mistakenly think that the Torah Shebichtav and the Torah Shebaalpeh are really one and the same. The Torah Shebaalpeh is the Tirush, the interpretation of the Torah Shebichtav. And without the Torah Shebaalpeh, we wouldn't understand properly the Torah Shebichtav, which is true. However, it's clear in the Talmud that there's something more involved. So the Talmud, in several places, comments on these expressions that appear in Chumash. Very so often the expression that appears is Toro Soy in the plural, my Toro, my Toros. What do you mean my Toros? Only one Toros? Those are Toro Loisi Toro Heros. Not going to be another Toros. What do you mean? So the Talmud says several times, Toro Soy, Ars Toro Shebichtav, Ars Toro Shebaalpeh. The two Toros. There's a Toro Shebichtav and a Toro Shebaalpeh. And we assume that they're really different. Very often the Toro Shebaalpeh is merely a pirush, an elaboration, an explanation of the Toro Shebichtav. Very often it's not really a pirush, it's a different Torah. And they really, the Torah Shebichtav is generally assumed to be more strict than the Torah Shebaalpeh. The Torah Shebichtav, the Kabbalah Svarim right, was given the Midas Adin. Rav Soloveitchik used to mention this in the name of the Baal HaTanya. The Roshes, and then we took it there in the end of Chumash Bamidbar. And the Torah Shebichtav is often, take for example, Ayin Tachas Ayin. So read the Pasuk. According to the simple reading of the Pasuk, it sounds like it's a very strict, harsh punishment. The Torah Shebaalpeh softens it and it says, nah, it doesn't mean that, it means that it's only one. We have other instances like that. One of them being regarding Sukkot. Rosh, the famous comment in Bava Kamma, in the second parish in Bava Kamma, where he points out that every halacha l'moshe m'Sinai is always l'hokil and never l'achmir, because we have from the simple reading of the psukim, it would appear, one would get the impression that a psukim requires three walls. There's a lot of Moshe Messina that chisels down the third wall, that it's sufficient if it's shlishes after the tefillah. You only need two walls, L-shaped. The third wall doesn't really have to be a full seven. It's often to be one tefach if you know where to place it properly. you can chisel down on the third wall. So the Rashi asks the question, how did the Talmud know that Halacha Moshe Sinai is to be makel to chisel down on the third wall? Maybe it means to add on that you need a little bit of a tefach on the fourth wall. Maybe it means lahachmir. There was one such opinion in the Gemara in Sukkot, that Halacha Moshe Sinai is lahachmir, but the conclusion of the Gemara is otherwise. So the Russian Baba Kama makes a statement, and he shows that this is so in various Gemaras, that we assume that every Halacha Moshe Sinai is always Lahakya. It's never Lahakya. And the Kabbalah storm to explain why, because the Halacha is Moshe Sinai, the Perash of Alper, it gives him the Midas HaChesed. Nimino, Eish Dos Lomo, that his brother gives from his right side. It's not to be taken literally, but figuratively speaking, visualize it as if chesed comes from the right side, and then all the strict things come from the left side. But God gave us the Torah from both sides. He gave us with the left hand, he gave us the Torah Shabbat Tzav, and the right hand, he gave us the Torah Shabbat Tzav. He said, whenever there's any conflict, follow the Torah Shabbat Tzav. So that's what it means. Mimino, Eish Dos Lama, that's a description of the Torah Shabbat Tzav, which was given the Midas HaChesed. We have halachas based on this. Many halachas based. One happens to be regarding the Sechamayim, the end of Zvachim, gave a shiur for a group of Balabatim and Yeshua in a few weeks about this part of this time. Now this pasuk is one of the mekoros in this time. Mimino eish dos lama, that the Torah Shabbat Peh was given, mimino means mekerach minas ha-chesed as opposed to midas ha-din. Has an interesting comment that the city Yerushalayim was divided among two Shvatim, and they divided Eretz Israel. So there's a question regarding all of the other borders. Was it permissible when dividing Eretz Israel amongst the Shvatim to draw the border in the middle of the city or not? So that's a dispute in the end of Masechet Sanhedrin on the last daf. Machlokes Abiyechon Rishlokshi, it doesn't come up so often. How many times in the days of Yeshua ben Nun they made a chalukah sa'aretz, and then they never made it by Hashem. There was no second chalukah, but the Novi Yecheskel writes in the end of the Vos Yecheskel that Losid Lovin there will be another chalukah. So it's a dispute, Losid Lovin, when the Nebu of Yecheskel will be fulfilled, when the prophecy will be fulfilled, will they be allowed to draw the border in the middle of the city, or will they have to draw the border either to one side or to the other? So although this was a dispute regarding all other borders, all other cities, regarding Yerushalayim, everybody agrees that Yerushalayim was clearly divided amongst two different Shvatim. Half of Yerushalayim belonged to Shevet Yehuda, and half of Yerushalayim belonged to Shevet Binyamin. And it's so strange, the Talmud tells us that the border ran through right in the middle of the Azorah, of all places, right in the middle of the Beis HaMikdash, the Har HaBayis, the Beis HaMikdash, where the border ran through. Half of the Azorah belonged to Shevet Yehuda, half of the Azorah belonged to Shevet Binyamin. And the Mizbeah could only be built the Chelka Shel Binyamin. Why? Because Yaakov Avinu, when he gave the blessings to the children, made a statement that the Ashuras Hashchin and the Mokam HaKrobos HaKrobonis, the blessing to Binyamin was that the HaKrobos HaKrobonis will be the Chelka Shel Binyamin. And the Chachamim understood that to be a prophecy, not just a blessing. Abrache, they understood that was a nevuah and it had to be fulfilled. So the Talmud tells us that the Mizbeach was supposed to be a square, which it was on top. But on the bottom, on top it was a square, then it got a little fatter, became another square, bigger square, then on the bottom it was not a full square. Because if they would make it a full square of 32 by 32 amos on the ground, where it touches the ground level, a little bit of the bottom of the Mizbeach of the Yisod would have been the Chelka Shel Yehuda, none of which was allowed to be. The Gemara was so marked that none of the Mizbeach was permitted to be the Chelka Shel Yehuda. So the Mizbeach was not symmetrical. It was not a square, it was lopsided. Very strange, why such an insistence that no part of the Mizbeach can be the Chelka Shel Yehuda?
The Maharsho has a very interesting comment on that Gemara in the Zohar, in the Zohar. Relevant today in our country. It says that Yehuda represented the government. Yaakov Avinu gave a blessing to Yehuda. That the government should always be controlled by the descendants of Shem. The government is supposed to represent the Beis HaMikdash, the religion. And the blessing of Yaakov Avinu
government would have control of the Bereshon doesn't want any part of the Mitzvah to be in Chelsea Shal Yehudim. Every part of the Mitzvah has to become separate, as he said. And even though perhaps other cities could not have a border going through them, that half the city belongs to one shaykh, half the city belongs to another shaykh, Yerushalayim had to be like that, because Yerushalayim had a double status. Yerushalayim was both the capital of Eretz Yisrael, you know, look, Yerushalayim often is the capital. The capital of the Medina has to be Yerushalayim. So Yerushalayim, as the capital of the Israel, has to have a section of Chelkos Shel Yehuda. So Yehuda was the government. So the government's offices were supposed to be in that area of the city. And the Beis HaMikdash had to be the Dafka of the Chelkos Shel Binyamin. None of it should be controlled by the government. Everything had to be the Chelkos Shel Binyamin. And that's why Yerushalayim had to be divided into two. It was a divided city. One city, the whole city was the capital, but there were two halakim. One was Yehuda, one was Binyamin. Both belonged to the colonies. There are different explanations given as to why the Medrash suggests different explanations as to why Binyamin was there. Right.
That there's a kfeida that none of the mizbeach can be bechelkos shel Yehuda, so the Mashal says that we understand why, because Yehuda is the governor. Why do we have to be dafka bechelkos shel Binyamin? It could have been some other chela. So the Midrashim discuss why. We have different, interesting, the Midrashim have other explanations. One is because it wasn't involved in the Chiras Yehuda. But there are another two Midrashim. One letter says because Binyamin was the only one who was born in Eretz Yisrael, from all of the Shvatim. And another letter says because, based on the same thing, when Yaakov Avinu came back to Eretz Yisrael and he had a chan for Esau, so everybody bowed down, all the children bowed down, but the Yaman wasn't born yet, so he didn't bow down. And basically the two Midrashim are saying the same thing, because the Jews who were born in Golus have a Golus mentality and they books up to the Goy. And the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't want that. He wants that we should be born in Eretz Yisrael and have a Sabra mentality, to have a feeling of independence. Sometimes the people in this country have a little bit too much independence, because there was need for a change, because the Jews came from Europe where there was no feeling of independence at all. They came to Eretz Yisrael and they wanted to be Leos Hankoshi and Atzmaim, they wanted independence, and they just, some of them just went a little wild. A lot of them went a little too far with the independence. But the Ribbono Shel Olam does want that every Jew should have independence. That we shouldn't be kufim to the, shouldn't book us to the ground. So that's why the Beis HaMikdash, but that's how the Midrashim said that the Beis HaMikdash was built to help the Shel Binyamin, because he was the one who was born in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he was the one who didn't book us the Esau. The conclusion of all of the brachas that Moshe Rabbeinu gives B'nai Yisrael, he mentions Yishkon Yisrael Betach Bodod Ein Yaakov, that the Jewish people lived alone, like the blessing that they were given by Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu gave an Yisrael a blessing that should always be separate from the other nations. There are those Jews who don't understand this. The secular Jews don't understand that this is a blessing. They consider this a curse. There are those who get up and make statements that we will no longer be Hein Andor Odod Yishkon. They don't see why we have to be different. But our tradition has it that that is a blessing. That was the blessing that Yaakov gave the Jewish people. We are very different. We're different in the bones. We're different in the genes. We're different in the chromosomes. Everything is different. Damim Tamer Chaim Medaber Israel. Very different. Everything is very different. And that bracha that Yaakov gave his children was what Moshe Rabbeinu continued to bless us, that we should continue to be bothered, we should continue to be separate. We have to be an Or Lagoyim. The prophets tell us that we are supposed to serve the function of enlightening the other nations of the world, but not by being buddy-buddy with the Umasadim. The way to enlighten, the way to serve as an Or Lagoyim is that we should have a good government, and we should be honest, and we should be build well and plant well, and we should show the way we can build a wonderful Medina. Not with batlanas and not with filth. Everything should be clean. So
halachas in this Gemara, Shmor al Yisrael Nikiyah, that they have on the packaging, that Binyan in the Gemara, that's part of the mitzvah of Binyan Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael should be clean, both in the Ruchni's biggest sense, not to have Avodah Zorah, beer Avodah Zorah, is part of the mitzvah of Binyan Eretz Yisrael, and to have a clean country, to have everything growing, and a good economy, everything should be working well. That's the way we should be in Orla Goy. We will not be able to serve as an Orla Goyim unless we will be Bodo. We have to keep this in mind. We live in times that actually it's always so. That people are always thinking about what is politically correct. What's the politically correct thing to do? And the Torah tells us that that's a terrible thing. A person has to stand up for the, that's what we are, the Orla Goyim, we have to stand up for the right position. And the Torah praises Shevet Levi. Shumecho v'yirecho v'ish chasidecho, v'vurim v'tumim v'givim v'shevet Levi. Why? Because ha'omil v'yobu v'limo lo yidaita v'sechel v'hikir v'barom v'yodo. When it came to punishing those who had sinned by the Chet HaEgel, they didn't care who they were. Relative, strength, talmidim, didn't matter. The person did wrong, you have to say that he's doing wrong. Just because I have to be a good friend of mine, I have to be a relative of mine. You're not allowed to cover up. And for that reason that Shevet Levi was singled out, Yoram Mishpatach HaLayankim, they are Ruhuyim to Kaskin the Shilas. You have a person who's always taking, making political, in a negative sense. He's always saying the thing that's politically correct because of this Nagi and that Nagi. So how can he pass in the Shire? The ones who have to pass in the Shire are the ones who are above these political Nagi. We should all, the Rambam stresses, we should all try to join Shevet Levi in this. And it cannot be Levi. My father wasn't a Levi. I'm not going to be, my father wasn't a Kohen, wasn't a Levi. So I can't be a Kohen, can't be a Levi. The Rambam writes, the famous Rambam, the end of Hilchos Shmita, the Yehu writes, and in a certain sense, we should all join Shevet Levi in this sense. We should all try to learn a lot of Torah. We should all try to lose all of these negiyas, not do the things that are just politically correct. We should do the things that are absolutely correct, according to the absolute standard, according to what the Torah tells us. And that way we will all be Yoram Mishpatach HaLayayim. I want to bless everybody. We should have much happiness this year, much success in the Yogi Center here and in America.
We'd like to thank Rabbi Sasser. We'd like to quiet here so we can keep going. For those who are wondering how come we're not learning all night in only 4 hours, you'll stay here, and we thank you for yielding that time.